All right, so DSL DevCon, Chris Sells, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, it's been a long time. Now, you were on Channel 9. In fact, if you scroll back on, like, go into the video section, go all the way to the first page,
Yeah.
you're either on the last page or the second to last page or the third to last. You're early.
Yeah, I remember when it was still an experiment. In fact, I remember before Channel 9 existed, when it was started, and I was on a plane the other day. I was flying to Europe. And the pilot came on and said, "If you want to know what's going on, turn over to Channel 9." And the whole story all just came flooding
That's
back
awesome.
about how Channel 9 is the back door into what actually happens at Microsoft and the real people behind the thing. And it's been a, well, you tell me. I mean,
5 years.
yeah, and it's successful, writer. I mean, over this last 5 to 10 years with blogging and Channel 9 and just the transparency and now Twitter, I think. You know, our customers get probably more of the how the sausage is made at Microsoft than they really want at this point. They probably see more of it than they care to. But
Fair enough.
that's better, right? More transparency is always better.
Amen. I
Yes.
totally agree with that. In the spirit of transparency, what the hell's going on here with DSL DevCon? Why did you start this? What's going on?
So it's funny. So I don't know, a year or two ago. So this is DevCon number 6.
Okay.
It was sometime in the 90s when I threw the first one, which is the ATL DevCon. And I was just
Nice.
telling somebody this story about this. It started because on the ATL mailing list, I was doing a bunch of ATL at the time, somebody in England said, "Hey, let's get together for a bunch of beers and talk about ATL." I thought, well, I'm jealous. I'm not in England, right? I can't go and have beers and talk about ATL. So I thought, well, I'll start something up in Portland. How about a bunch of guys, you know, get together and we'll talk about ATL in Portland, and that snowballed into 100 people all in a conference room at a hotel for 2 days, giving 45-minute talks on ATL one after the other. And I gave a talk. It's the only DevCon I've actually given a talk at.
Interesting.
And I kind of I've been to so many Microsoft conferences by that time, and I wasn't a Microsoft employee. And there was just always this big bag and all this swag and these T-shirts and all these booths with all these vendors and frisbees, and I cut away all of that, and I just said, "Let's just have folks in a room, and we'll talk about the technology, and it won't be a big deal." And I had proceedings. I had T-shirts. I had 45-minute talks all day long. I had a panel. In fact, that first DevCon set the format for every single one that's come after. I've done the exact same thing in terms of format every single time because I liked
Excellent.
it so much. It worked out
Cool.
so well. And the last one I had was in 2003, and that was a web services DevCon, and I was an employee at that time, and I was working at MSDN, but I was helping out CSD, right, the Connected Systems Division, who was in charge of Indigo, right, the Windows Communication Foundation, and ironically, I now work for that division, although I still haven't really written any Indigo code. I still,
Interesting.
yeah, it's kind of strange, but I work for them now. And a couple years ago, a year ago, Facebook was big and somebody started a petition and they said, "It's been too long since Chris has thrown a DevCon." And dozens of people signed this petition. I didn't know about it until long after it had come. And then I was at the, and I figured it was time. And right around the launch of Office and Vista, I started looking for help, marketing help. Because this is a small conference and I can run it mostly by myself, but I still need some logistics help and I still need marketing help. It takes about 3 people to run this conference. And I went to look for marketing people right around the time when every single one of them was doing the Office or Vista launch. They were kind of busy. And then Christmas came along and the new year. And so, anyway, fast forward to the PDC, last October's PDC, when we launched Oslo. And that was a big PDC for us, for the division. And Don XML Demshak walked up to me and he said, "Dude, DSL DevCon." And I went, "Well, I'm a huge alliteration fan. So already I like the name of the conference." And so the
Excellent.
conference was named. All I had to do was throw it. And that's what I did.
Beautiful.
And so it's kind of interesting too, because so I've been doing Oslo, or the code names we had before Oslo, for about 4 years. It's been an incubation for a long time.
Wow.
And then, you know, it's actually only really been, it was probably on the productization path for about a year before the PDC. And then, you know, it's been about 6 months or a little more since the PDC. So, but I've been doing it for about, in fact, this month, as of this month, it'll be 4 years that I've been doing Oslo or Oslo-related work. Started out, there's an incubation of about 12 of us sitting around thinking, gosh, would it be a good idea to do model-driven development? And we tried a bunch of things. And we said, let's build an app. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be model-driven? Why don't we write some stuff down? Mm-hmm. Is that a good idea? Does that help us build the app? Is anything better? And we did that for a while until somebody decided, yes, it is better. Yes, that's a good idea. And then we started the productization plans for Oslo. And mm-hmm. and then here we are. Mm-hmm. And so along the way, what we found out was that there's a lot of stuff you want to write down about your system. And we tried all kinds of stuff, right? We tried UML and XML and XAML. And we tried all of these things. And what we found was, you have to write down a lot of stuff that doesn't have to do with your system before you get to write down the stuff that does. But even with XML, you got to write a bunch of stuff mm-hmm. that isn't your system. Just so it's Martin Fowler today in his keynote, in fact, said you need the carrier, right, of your stuff.
Yes.
And so the nice thing about the DSLs is that you can write down the things that you care about in your system, and the carrier is almost non-existent. It can just be the stuff you care about in your system. And then the nice thing about that is, with the proper set of tools, you can write a parser that in the exact same amount of time. And by parser, I mean you've got text input mm-hmm. that describes what you want to say about your system, and now you've got in memory some object model that you can write a program against. Martin Fowler this morning said that he took the exact same data, he represented it as a custom DSL and in XML, and the parsers, using parser generator tools and the XML parsers that come on various platforms today, mm-hmm. took them the exact same amount of time to do the translation. So now the question is, if you have a set of tools where you can write a parser in the exact same amount of time for both the thing with all the carrier, all the extra stuff in it, mm-hmm. or just the essence of your system, which do you pick? And so that's where DSLs are pretty handy.
Absolutely.
And so there was this kind of movement, and Martin's been working on his book for a couple of years, and there's this been kind of this growing groundswell, not at Microsoft, but outside mm-hmm. and inside of Microsoft for domain-specific languages. And Oslo, one of the things that Oslo does at its core is it provides a kind of a language workbench for building these DSLs. Mm-hmm. And there's just this groundswell, and I thought, wow, that's actually a really good, not only do we have alliteration, but that's actually a really good idea for a conference.
Absolutely.
And that's how I pick my conferences, just what I care about at the moment. And then I send out some emails and I put some stuff on my blog and I say, does anyone want to come? Mm-hmm. And this is the sixth DevCon I've thrown. It's arguably the fourth topic I've used. And this is the biggest DevCon ever. We got 150 people. We filled the room. I had to turn people away for the last week.
Wow.
We got people from 15 countries. We have a student who goes to Charles University in Prague who spent his own money to come over here to be at this conference.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah, and you know, Martin Fowler giving the keynote.
Sure.
Paul Vick, one of the architects on the compiler for Visual Basic. I mean, this is a bunch of people that really care about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's kind of like the start of something that's going to be a lot bigger, right?
Interesting.
The kind of people that are in the room and the amount of interest, mm-hmm. Like you say, to have the biggest DevCon ever, this is a thing.
Yeah.
It feels like a real thing.
Right on. Well, congratulations.
Sure.
That's cool. I mean, you know, DSL certainly is sort of the lingua franca in our world. Mm-hmm. It's like the big thing right now. I mean, a couple of years ago it was dynamic languages,
sure.
and now it's DSLs, but I guess what I would ask you is, you know, most programmers are general purpose programmers.
Yes,
I think it's fair to say that.
Yes.
And so you want to have those general purpose languages make it easy to compose DSLs. I know C# is sort of moving that direction. Anders has hinted at that publicly.
Sure.
So what are your thoughts on, I mean, the thing about Oslo that I've found interesting, and I've covered it for Channel 9, I went to the PDC, and I saw the talk today.
Sure.
It's incredibly, it seems I couldn't put my head around, like, when would I actually use this?
Ah, good question.
So, because it's so abstract. I mean, it's like, in the sense that, yeah, I can create my essence.
So that's the interesting thing. Yeah. So a lot of times people ask, for Oslo specifically, not DSL, but for Oslo.
Yes, exactly.
Right, what is our target programmer? And our answer is, anyone who's building a system with data in it. Well, of course, that's everything.
Yes.
Right? So that doesn't really help.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't narrow the things down. I mean, one of the things that's kind of interesting is, you know, when you've got an idea this simple, you can apply it everywhere. And so now the question is, where do you apply it? You wake up in the morning and you know, I've got to solve this problem today.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you say, well, that problem is slots into this thing called DSLs,
mm-hmm.
and therefore I will write a DSL. And so the thing that I always think of is, a lot of times what we're writing down, whether it's in XML files or databases or even in attributes in our C# code or whatever, we're actually writing down things that describe our application. And there's really kind of two kinds of data generally in our system. One kind of data is the instance data, the running instances of our program. These are things like a shopping cart on Amazon, right? Bob is putting stuff in a shopping cart. Where do we keep that data? Oh, that's easy. We put it in the database, right? We don't even think about that. We put it in the database. And why? Because we can replicate it, we can secure it, and we can, we've got a separation of the client from the service, and we can rev them independently, and we can back it up, and we've got amazing query capabilities. And the more data you stick into that database, the more capabilities you have in terms of writing more and more powerful programs. So you're writing a program, you've got data, where do you keep it? Oh, that's easy. You keep in the database.
Hmm.
But then we have this other class of data that seems to be second class, which is the data that describes my application. Where do we keep it? Well, some of it we write in our C# code. Some of it we put in configuration. Some of it might find its way into a database. We've got all of this other kind of metadata, although it's just data.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all this metadata that describes our applications, and we make, on a case-by-case basis, decisions about where we keep that data. So in one kind of data, where do we keep it? Database. Another kind of data, I don't know, where do you feel like keeping it today? I don't know. And yet, we want to do the same thing. We want to query that data, we want to secure it, we want to replicate it, we want to do all of the same things with this, you know, application description data, this metadata that we want to do with this instance data. Not only that, but we want to join the two together, right? When we're diagnosing our system and we want to find out these objects are doing what over here for who and what's their history, and we want to do all kinds of diagnostics, and we want to do impact analysis, and there's all kinds of stuff we want to do in this metadata world, but we don't have the tools, and we want to bring it together with this instance data where we do have the tools, but we can't use it because they're in different places from each other. And so Oslo is really about, I've got data. Could be application instance data, could be application metadata, I don't care, it's data.
Mm.
And so what we get to do in DSLs, and we get to do with these kinds of data modeling tools, is that we can describe our data.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, in Oslo, we have a DSL specifically for describing data called M-Schema, and it's all about data modeling.
Mm.
And then we take that and we create schema in a SQL database, and you can store your data in the SQL database and get all the same tools as all your application instance data.
Hmm.
So really, and this is a long way around of saying, you use DSLs when you've got data.
Interesting. And you need to program that specific
data.
So that you basically let the data express itself.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, there are all kinds of, Oslo also kind of dips its fingers or its toes into the modeling space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I want to capture stuff about mine. I want to write stuff down about my system. And there's all kinds of reasons to do that. One of those is communication. I want to tell other people about my system, and I want people to look at my system and say, yes, no, oh, but you forgot this over here, right? I mean, I want people to understand my system and give me feedback and make sure I've got a correct system. And so DSLs are wonderful for that because I can write down a language, a description of my application in a language that people who aren't programmers can understand and push back on and say, oh, no, that's wrong. You got that totally wrong. Mm. For example, you can give a designer a CSS document, and they don't consider themselves programmers, but they can say, oh, dude, I can't believe you picked this font. What are you thinking? Right? They can give you feedback on your system.
Sure.
Right? But it's a programming language. It's a domain-specific programming language, mm-hmm. but it's a programming language. They just don't think of themselves that way, and that's powerful. Right? That's mm-hmm. a powerful way to communicate. So that's a fabulous thing you can do with DSLs. Mm. Another thing that's even more powerful, and we see this a lot in our, again, with our designers in XAML-based systems. Mm. They write down XAML, designers do. And they, you know, they can look at the angle brackets, right, at its core, right? It's an XML dialect,
sure.
XAML-based. And they can look at the angle brackets, and some do. But most of them are using tools like Blend, right? They're dragging and dropping, and they're looking at it in a visualization specifically for designers to do design services, right, mm-hmm. screens. But the interesting thing about that particular kind of document, and by the way, HTML and CSS and a bunch of other examples I could give you, is that they're designing actual documents that become running parts of our system, right? These aren't just, you can look at it and tell me if I got it right or wrong, and then I can go and write C# code to make that behavior happen, right? Mm-hmm. This is, you make a change, Mr. Non-Programmer, and it goes into my live system, and it changes how the system works. Hmm. No programmers required. That is a huge benefit. Hmm. And so you look at things like HTML and CSS and XAML, and you think those are kind of one-offs, right? Domain-specific languages for a specific purpose. If you take those ideas and you generalize them, suddenly you can have people writing down and reading real running artifacts in real-life systems, even if they're not designers, but they're experts in some other particular kind of domain. Mm-hmm. Right? You can suddenly empower all kinds of non-programmers to make changes to our real running applications. And this is a very powerful thing to do.
Agreed. And then where's Charles Simonier? He should be walking at any moment.
Oh, exactly.
And in fact, it sounds like intentional programming.
It's funny you say that, but in many ways I'm thinking about that because we have Magnus Christensen here.
He's right on.
Going to be giving a talk tomorrow from Intentional Software about intentional software.
Cool.
And you think of Charles's ideas, and it's kind of this big ideas, and we looked at that and we went, what are you talking about? It's kind of this top-down big ideas, use the most natural syntax for when you're writing your programs. And this is kind of the kind of grassroots kind of come up, well, I've got this little language over here, and I've got this little language over here, and we're meeting in the middle. I mean, we very much are.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent, man. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a great conference.
Great.
And hopefully we'll see you on some interviews here.
I'm happy to help.
Right on.
I always will serve my MSDN brethren.
Excellent, man. Great job.
Yep.
Thank you.